now at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Folks, thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly, but right now you can give a call, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Alex is back. He's producing, so he had a lot of fun, a couple weeks off, and he was all over the world, as far as I know. At least that's what
At least the state.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right.
This state.
So this morning, Mr. Kelly.
Yes.
I mean, it looks pretty darn foggy. How about over on the river bluffs?
It wasn't too bad, actually. I was expecting it to be foggy because as I came out, I mean, you can just see the air out there
and
feel it. Yeah. As Matt Benn says, it's the air you can wear is what we're experiencing. But no, I didn't. I thought I'd run into some, but did not see much fog this morning.
Really?
Yeah.
So even as you came into the valley and crossed the river and everything else?
Yeah, don't remember really seeing any because I was half asleep. Oh. No, I wasn't. I was awake. I was driving. I was fine. But no, it wasn't too bad.
Curious.
It's just humid. Now, the other morning, it was really cool when I drove in because the clouds were low enough that you could see the top of the arch, but not the middle of it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And this morning, as I mentioned very early, as I'm sure you all were listening at 5 o'clock, that if you live at the top of One Cardinal Way, the top couple floors were in clouds. But down at the deck, we were okay.
Wow.
Yeah, so just kind of a weird morning.
Sounds fun.
Well, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Never know what's going to happen.
You don't, that's for sure.
Thanks, Brian.
You bet.
It is Saturday morning, and we can have a roundtable discussion about what's impacting you, your yard, your landscape, and everything else. Oh, how's your herb garden doing? Oops, not so well. Oh, maybe you watered too much. Maybe you didn't water enough. How about those houseplants? Better start checking them out because they're going to be coming in soon. And maybe you want to repot them and put them in a bigger pot. Maybe you shouldn't do that, but if you're going to do it, make sure you use potting mix and not potting soil. You want to do some more planting? Well, how do you improve your soil? You want to do some pruning? Well, how do you do the pruning? What's the best time to do it? What about pruning going into wintertime? Is that something to worry about? Using the information I'll share with you, my thoughts, and help you orchestrate, hopefully, and solidify your options with, of course, the final judgment of the action you're going to be taking is going to be on your shoulders. And by the way, this is your show, and I certainly appreciate you inviting me into your home or wherever you happen to be listening. Another very important player, as I said before, Alex is back. So he's producing. He pushes all the buttons, answers the phone, and everything else. When you do call, he just needs your first name and where you're calling from, not what you're calling about or anything else. And he doesn't have any phone numbers for any other thing other than this one right here. And I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. I can come to your home and do a landscape consultation if you'd like for me to come around and do a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. And on the homepage, there's my email address and phone number where I can be reached. Well, let's get moving. Today's stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Catalpa trees, maples, red buds, and many, many, many more, along with milkweed for monarchs, which is a St. Louis butterfly project. And mingling in with those milkweeds is the coneflowers and other perennials as well. Down the walkway, on the right-hand side, there's tennis courts. And, wow, one of them looks a little bit small than everything else. I wonder if that's that pickleball or whatever I saw an article about. But anyway, so, and on the left side is a playground. And the fountain was really shooting some water up. So when it gets really hot, and the kids are playing in the playground, they can go over and stand underneath a fountain and kind of cool down. Also, the birds like it, the squirrels like it, and it is a place for everyone to cool down. You don't have to be a kid. A little further down behind a building, there is a great fountain in this little lake that's there. And the rolling topography, wow, it's just really neat to kind of see this. And, ooh, what's this? A horseshoe pit. Wow. There's benches and picnic tables scattered all over the place. A second lake has a bunch of ducks running around all over the place and a bunch of ducks in the water, too. There's probably a massive, I know it's it is a massive bald cypress, probably diameter of the caliper, maybe 40 inches. It is just absolutely huge. And there's some canna plantings, which are in bloom right in that area, too. There's some Crimson King maples, newly installed oak. He's showing us what it's going to be like in the future in that particular location. Walkers and joggers, yes, they were all over the place, as well as crickets. Some great cricket sounds. Didn't hear any cicadas. I guess it's too early for them to wake up this morning. A planting of miscanthus, iris, daylilies, and at the corner, cannas as well. The corner of Missouri and Arsenal Street. There's a grove of white pines there, along with a really young Norway spruce. It says, well, you white pines are getting kind of, pines are not doing so well. Spruces seem to be doing better, so here I am. The homes across the street reflect architectural era of quite a while ago. Birds from mourning doves to cardinals to robins were kind of wandering all over the place and thinking, wonder if it's going to rain. And the neatly mowed lawn in this park was just absolutely fantastic. Where is this? Well, this is Benton Park, which is at the Jefferson corner of Arsenal. Well, I guess it'd be, maybe it's on the corner of Arsenal and Jefferson. Who knows? Anyway, it's a true gem. It's a great place just to kind of wander around and see all kinds of different things. So Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. If you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, back to the phones we go. But if you do have questions or concerns about your outdoors or your houseplants or anything else, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Nadette lives in Overland, and she's going to be, or he's going to be, our first caller. Hi,
yes,
Nadette.
Yes, Mike.
Hi.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling for my neighbor. She has what we think is a Japanese maple that turns red during the fall. Okay, the bark is coming off. It's splitting, and inside the bark, it looks like a fungus. When you turn the little silvery pieces, it looks like a mushroom under there. So she's been spraying it with the Bonine brand for fungus, and it doesn't seem to do anything, and she is afraid she's going to lose the tree. So what do you think she should do?
Probably just leave it alone. I think, you know, if she's seeing that kind of thing, if the tree overall looks healthy, leaf-wise, number of leaves, size, color, this is just something that's, you know, just a natural process. And a lot of times you can do more damage by trying to take care of something that doesn't need to have anything taken care of than by just leaving it alone. So unless she starts to see some sort of decline as a result of whatever's happening, then that's when you start taking action. Taking a preventative type action like this is just kind of a waste of money and time.
And okay, well, that's good because the tree looks good so far. So.
Right.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I'll let her know.
Okay, thank you for calling, Nadette.
Okay, bye.
Bye. And now let's head over from Overland over to Robert's yard. Hi, Robert. How are you?
Good morning, Mike. I've got a peach tree, and about 3-4 weeks ago, I heard that it was peach picking time over at Eckert's, and mine are struggling to get ripe, and it doesn't get full sun till about 10:30, I'm guessing.
Ooh.
But it does get the full sun till around 6:30 in the evening.
Right.
Plus I've got some black spots and a few worms and some. But overall, this year, they're nice. They're big. Last year, I lost just a bunch of them, and they just fell off when they were about mid-size grown, you know.
Right. Well, basically, just because it's, you know, peach time at Eckert's doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be peach time in your yard, because exposure, variety-wise, and everything else can have an impact. You know, not, it's just not related to sun. It's related to lots of different factors as well. How old is your tree?
Right now it's probably 13.
Oh.
Early, mid-teens.
Yeah, so it's getting
years old.
So I would say don't worry about it. Just kind of keep your fingers crossed, and hopefully you're going to be able to make a harvest. But there's nothing you can do, nothing you should have done. If you got good production early in the spring, basically, after flowers, just make sure there's not too many peaches on there, because the weight of the peaches sometimes can cause cracks in the branches and things like that. But other than that, it's on, if the foliage is good, everything, just like the previous caller, everything looks good, then you're just going to have to wait and play the game.
Okay, and what about spraying? Does it need spraying every few weeks, every couple weeks?
For what?
Just to keep the worms and insects away.
Well,
this year the Japanese beetle.
Basically, unless you, most of the insecticides, unless you see the insect and then you spray in the insecticide you're using, you hit the insect with it directly, then you're just kind of wasting your time.
Okay.
So I would say, you know, just preventative spraying is not, is, you know, for a circumstance like yours, I wouldn't bother with it.
All right. Good information. Thanks very much.
Yeah. I mean, I'm making it sound really simple, but a lot of times we make things way more complicated than we need to, and the end result is not going to be any better. And like I was saying with the previous caller, her neighbor may be causing more problems than good by taking too much action rather than just letting things be as they are.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Sure. Thanks, Robert. And now let's go from Robert's to Barbara's. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Mike. I received an azalea that was in a pot, but I got it as a bouquet. And after it bloomed, I planted it outside in a berm, and I've kept it watered, and it looks healthy and green. What should I do now for the winter and hoping it'll bloom next spring?
Well, and yeah, and hopefully it's a hardy variety, because a lot of times there is varieties of azaleas that cannot grow here, you know, because of our weather, winter-wise, and other factors also. So it looks healthy now, so that's great, that's fine. You definitely, you know, maybe 1 or 2 inches of mulch around it, but that's about all you need to do going into wintertime. When we come out of wintertime, then you want to fertilize it, probably starting, let's say, first of making sure the foliage is still on it and everything else. Around the 1st of March with a fertilizer for acid-loving plants, and then feed it monthly all the way March, April, and May.
Okay. And would pine needles be good to use as a mulch?
Yes, but I mean, that's fine. But people always think pine needles are going to make the ground acidic, but it's not the case. They don't do that. They're fine as a mulch. But that's not the case. You need to add, you know, let's say chemicals to make sure that the ground is going to be acidic.
Okay, so I do that in the spring.
Right. You're fertilizing in the spring, but the mulch you put on top of the root system going into wintertime.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go from Barbara's over to Bob's yard. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Mike. Got a question.
Okay.
I got zoysia. I've been fighting the fungus, and then the nursery gave me some fungicide to put on it. I'm finally getting some green coming through. Should I hit it again or wait this late in the year?
I would maybe give it one more application, but next year, since you know that probably the spores and everything that caused this problem is not going to be totally eradicated, it's going to probably take maybe 1 or 2 more years of doing it. As soon as it starts greening in the spring, then make your first application of the fungicide, and then maybe make one every 4 to 6 weeks all the way up, you know, until basically the end of August, early September.
All right, you can handle that part of it. Now, what's good to kill crabgrass?
Well, right now, basically, if it's mixed in with your zoysia, there's not too much you can do. But the best thing to do is, you know, next year is to go after it with a pre-emergent. That's the best thing you can possibly do.
Now, it's it kind of took over where the brown was.
Ah.
And that on me.
Right. Spot. Yeah, the crabgrass is a, you know, it's a warm season annual weed. So you'd put the, you know, the pre-emergent down when the yellow forsythia is in bloom in your neighborhood if you don't have one in your yard.
All right. So it'd be all right to hit it one more time before the end of the season then.
Right. Once more. And then also, for anybody that has zoysia, you got, if you want to make one last fertilization, you can do that, but get it done, you know, before the end of this month is going to be the best thing to do.
All righty, will do. Can I put them both together?
Probably not. You know, I would make an application of one, then wait for a day or so, and then do the other one.
All righty, we can do that. Thanks, Mike.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go and see what's going on in Paul's yard. Hi, Paul.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Appreciate your expertise on all the horticulture questions and everything. But my question is about a Bradford pear that I have in my front yard. And this year it developed, I don't know if it was a fungus or what it was, a rusty type of thing on the buds and where the stems come out for the flowering things. And a lot of those, one day I was out there and it was like a rusty stuff was blowing off the tree. And a lot of these buds have fell off the tree. They're just like laying on the ground, just like a long stem with a black bud. And I'm just curious as to what that is.
Well, you know, it's kind of hard to, you know, tell without actually seeing it. But,
right. You
know, the Bradford pears, how old is your tree?
Probably 15 years old or better.
Yeah, that's probably heading towards the, you know, kind of the end of its life. So specifically what's making that is, you know, tough to, you know, from your description, it's a good description, but it's just, you know, it's kind of tough to decide or determine
okay. What
it is. What's the foliage look like?
The foliage has brown spots on the leaves.
But
you
don't have big, like, sections or big branches or even small branches or twigs that where all the leaves are brown. You don't have that.
No.
Okay. So, you know, again, there's if you're concerned about it, I would take a couple of leaves that have this problem or a couple stems to your favorite garden center and let them take a look at it. And then next year when the foliage starts coming out, make the application of whatever they give you.
Okay.
And
sounds good.
Because, I mean, your description was good, but it's just kind of tough to
guess it's what just it was. Got like a rusty colored covering over the black seed buds, and I couldn't figure out what on my porch railings. I couldn't figure out what all this rusty looking dust was.
Right.
And I tell you what, I don't know. I've never seen that before either. So I'll check it out, and I appreciate that.
Sure, my pleasure.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. And there's something, you know, if you had, let's say, 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 or 14-inch stems, twigs, where all the leaves are brown, then you'd have something called fire blight. And that means basically the plant is headed downhill, the Bradford pear. Once you get fire blight in the internal part and starts turning foliage brown, it's something that's on the inside, and there's nothing can be done with that. But from your description, it's you know, I can't really guess what it is. So, wanna Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We got some phone lines open if you have any questions, concerns, or comments. Let's go over to Wood River and see what's going on in Gene's yard. Hi, Gene.
Well, hi, Mike.
Hi.
I have a question. We talked to you last week about we had some stumps ground out and we've got dirt put in, and now we're getting ready to put the grass seed in. Do we put fertilizer in now or wait till in the spring?
Basically, if you've got a seed starter type fertilizer, you could put it, but don't put regular, just lawn fertilizer.
Okay.
Asking about the other fertilizer we got.
Well, we want to use Mill Organite on the yard, so just wait and don't put that on?
No, you can do that because that's organic and it's low analysis. So the reason why I didn't want you to use regular lawn fertilizer because the numbers are a little bit high. And so you don't want to, you know, it takes it a while for anything to break down, to be able to get down into the soil, for the, you know, the seed to germinate, have a root system that can absorb it. Personally, I would just, you know, I wouldn't bother with putting anything down. But if you want to put Milorganite, you can. But I would say it's not going to make much difference. And also, don't put a bunch of straw over the top of the seed either.
No, what we're wanting to do is just get some kind of base on this dirt to take us through the winter months, because
right.
we want to plug. We've got zoysia in the rest of the yard, and we want to plug those spots.
Right.
But
okay.
We don't want our dirt to just kind of float away.
Right.
So, but we can or we can't. It don't matter on the fertilizer.
Yeah.
It's
not going to make that much difference, to be honest.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's head over to Rick's yard. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
I love your show, by the way. I've got a question. It's my yard, and I'm wondering when the best time to dethatch and aerate. And one other thing, when is the best time to put down something for the winter, like a winterizer or something like that?
Are you? What kind of grass do you have?
I think it's just fescue.
Fescue, okay. Basically, you can go ahead and core aerate, you know, spread some compost, you know, put a winterizer down. You can get that done from kind of, let's say, probably the end of this month all the way up until, I wouldn't probably do it much past mid to late October.
Okay. What about dethatching and aerating?
Same thing. I mean, it's just get it done, you know, pretty soon. You don't want to get,
okay.
you don't want to do dethatching too late in the season, because if we have a cold snap really soon, a cold snap where what happens is dethatching exposes crowns and, you know, plant material that if it gets too cold, it could do some damage to it. So that's why you don't want to do it too late.
Do you think I should wait till next spring to dethatch?
No, you could do it now. If you get it done between now and, let's say, mid to late October, you should be fine.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mike. I
sure.
appreciate it.
Probably, I would say maybe early October. So you got basically 6 weeks to get it done.
All right, thanks a lot.
Sure. And now let's go over to Keith's yard. Hi, Keith.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I got a question for you. Years ago, I called in, and I didn't want to dig up my Peruvian daffodil bulbs every year.
Mm-hmm.
So you suggested putting them into pots, and that's been working great. But the squirrels love those pots. So this year, I put marigolds in with them, and they've been thriving and pretty much doing their job. I would love to keep those marigolds over the winter and use them again next year. Is there a way to do that?
Ooh, that's going to be really, really, really difficult. Generally,
okay.
it doesn't really work so good, even for big greenhouses or even at the botanical garden or anything like that. You could give it a try, but for the most part, you're not going to have much success.
Oh, okay. It was worth a shot.
Well, give it a try. You can call back and say, see, you don't know what you're talking about. My marigolds are just absolutely beautiful. They've been beautiful, blah, blah, blah. But
Should I put the marigolds into another pot without the bulbs? Because I don't want to keep the bulbs moist all winter.
Right. So you could,
okay.
and then, you know, then try to bring, are you going to try to bring them inside? Is that what you're trying to do?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But inside, they got to have a huge amount of light. And so you're going to need some grow lights, because you're not going to have the windows, even if they're in front of a west-facing window or something like that, it's not going to be an adequate amount of light. So
okay.
So you got another expense with buying grow lights.
I will. I'll probably give that a try, and
right.
I'll call you back in the spring if it works.
All right. Sounds perfect.
All right. Thanks.
Yep. Thanks, Keith. And now let's go and see what's going on in Ann's yard. Hi, Ann.
Hi there. Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I have, we got a driveway port, so I have on one side of the drive, I need to replace zoysia, a pretty good amount of width there. I've called a couple sod places, and, you know, it's available, et cetera. When would be the best time? Right now when it's super hot, or wait a little bit later toward the end of August? Will it still take
You know, the zoysia is, you know, still available, but it's not the ideal circumstance as far as to get it, you know, established, because you can get it, you can buy it plugs, you can buy the sod, you can get it laid. Just make sure the soil is prepared ahead of time before you do anything at all. And then, you know, keep it moist, and then just kind of keep your fingers crossed, because if the root system of your sod or plugs don't get established enough and we get, you know, kind of a severe cold circumstance, that could sort of send it downhill. So you're kind of at the end of the time when you want to do any planting of zoysia. So if you're going to do it, get the soil prepared ASAP and get the sod down as soon as you possibly can.
Right. Otherwise, wait until the spring.
Yeah, well, wait until the spring when it becomes available. So you're probably looking, you know, it all depends on what year, you know, how the weather's going to be next year. And so you're probably looking at, it's probably not going to be available until, let's say, close to the end of April, something like that, and then all the way through summertime.
Right. I mean, the concrete company did put some real nice black, you know, fill back the dirt in there. Will that be okay to just be like that for the winter?
Well, you mean just leave it and don't put anything?
Yes.
Well,
yes. There's zoysia around it, you know.
Right. So the only thing you'd have to worry about is some of that, if it's on a slope or anything, you know, eroding away. But beyond that, that's all. And if you, what you could do is just put an inch or two of mulch over the top of it. And then before you put the sod down next year, just, you know, make sure you rake the mulch off the ground.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot. Excuse me. Thanks a lot for your recommendation.
Sure. I mean, again, if you want to get it done really quick, and they've put some, you know, the contractors put some stuff there, you're still going to have to rototill that area up before you lay any sod down on it.
Really? Or what about raking it?
You have to rake it pretty heavy, not with a leaf rake, with a garden rake. And you just, you have to make sure that it's, you know, a lot of times when these contractors, they pack it down so tight, then that makes it pretty much impossible for any kind of sod to be able to penetrate, you know, the soil that's been packed down.
Yeah. So I got a pretty good steel garden rake, you know what I mean?
Okay, well. And you got big muscles?
I don't have a rototiller, I know that.
Yeah, big muscles, too.
Okay, well, doggone. Thanks a lot. I appreciate your, I'll try to get it done.
Yep.
ASAP.
Well, good luck
with
that. Sure.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Yep, and let's go over to Bob's yard. Hi, Bob.
Morning, Mike.
Morning.
I had a couple of questions. I'm probably not going to know the right name, but on a butterfly bush, a Pergasta, and I guess the color is purple, Agnus Bruteria.
Mm-hmm.
Am I anywhere close?
Well, Budley is, you know, the butterfly bush, you know, generally its name. This might be the specific variety that you're talking about.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And they're terrific. And my question was, of course, these are perennials. When do we prune that back?
You don't need to prune them at all.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
I mean, they're a shrub, right? We're talking shrub-wise. We're not talking perennials. And so, consequently, they really never need to be pruned. People generally prune when they don't have to. They just prune because they either don't have something to do, or they planted it in a bad spot and it's way too big for the location where they put it. But beyond that, you just leave them alone.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good intel. Well, these are done wonderful. This is the second year, and the butterflies love them, of course. But and I had another question about, if I may, in deadheading them. I deadhead them if I normally, quite often there's two new terminals, and I cut off the part that's turned brown, the deadhead. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's correct, because there's two new shoots of growth there.
Yeah, you don't have to do that even. I mean, they're very low care. So you're doing that strictly kind of for yourself, so you don't have to look at the spent flowers as opposed to just leaving them there.
Well, I agree with that 100%, but as opposed to, say, Lantana, where they kind of what I call self do this themselves.
Right.
These guys, they hang on, and it is aesthetic. But I've also found that through this summer, in particular, that when I do deadhead them, it promotes new blooms. Is that correct or not?
Well, it's just more kind of, let's say you speed the process up. They would still do more blooms regardless if you're deadheaded or not.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't disagree with you one at all. But there's an area, a commercial area, that has them in an entranceway, and they have not deadheaded them all summer.
Uh-huh.
And they have more dead blooms on them. The problem is, to me, the spent part, or the part that's turned brown, lasts so long.
Right.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, that, and one other question, if I may, please. I think in the spring or sometime you said, and I'm talking about liriope now.
Uh-huh.
You fertilize that, I believe you said March, April, and May.
Yeah, well, with liriope, you can do it even as soon as it's, you know, basically you're probably going to cut off the old blades. I don't know if you're going to do that or not. But wait until you start to see some new growth begin, and that's when you should make the first fertilization.
And then two consecutive months after that?
Right. That should be adequate.
And if you do cut that down, how low does that get cut to the ground?
About 6 or 8, you know, 4 to 6 inches.
Okay. And then after that, and now they're blooming now. So
you
don't use a bloom builder on them after those three initial fertilizations.
No, you don't need to. They'll bloom on their own.
Right. Okay. Thank you so much, Mike.
Sure. My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMY's Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Remember, if you've had problems with cool season annual weeds, now they've been gone for quite a while because they disappear when it starts getting hot, but they've dropped seed the whole time. This is a time when you want to get the pre-emergent down at the end of August. Henbit, chickweed, annual bluegrass, and several other plants. Where, like with the crabgrass and the spurge and all those kind of things, the pre-emergent would have gone down in the springtime. But for the cool season weeds, the pre-emergent goes down basically right now. So keep that in mind. So that stupid crabgrass. So the gentleman with the crabgrass in the, you know, the brown spots, make sure. I mean, it really will help. If I should have probably told him to go out there, since the area is brown anyway, just go ahead and, you know, use some Roundup or some grass killer on that crabgrass to get rid of it. Because you don't want it to go to seed, because then it's going to drop seed. Then you're going to have to make sure that you get the pre-emergent down. So let's go back to the phones, and let's go over to Rick Yard, and he lives in East Alton. Hi, Rick.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
Really appreciate you and your show. I have a quick question for you. We have hydrangea trees on the east side of our house, and about with all the rain we've been getting, one of them is just overloaded with the blooms. And after one of our more recent rains, the branches have not broken, but they're laying over. And I wasn't sure if it's safe to just go ahead and cut those some of those blooms off to let those branches spring back. Just wanted to see what you'd recommend.
Yeah, you could certainly do that. I mean, you could leave them there as long as they're flexible enough, and you don't think there's cracking in, you know, as a result of the, let's say, the weight of the bloom. But yeah, you can cut some of them off if you'd like.
Okay. Well, we weren't sure if it was something that the longer it stayed, if the branches wouldn't spring back. We just didn't know for sure the best way to proceed.
Yeah, this take the weight off of them.
Okay. One other real quick question. We have moles or voles in the yard. Is there any general advice you have? We haven't had them for several years, but they're back with a vengeance this year. Apparently, we're their vacation spot.
Well,
what do you recommend?
They're two different things. Moles, you know, are tunnelers. And voles, basically, they live underneath shrubs, and then they run around and do, you know, cause problems as a result of it. So they're two totally different things. With the moles, you use like a Victor spear or choker loop trap, and you put it over the tunnels that pop up where they tunnel around looking for earthworms to eat. But the voles, you got to find out where they're living So look under shrubs or by, you know, sidewalks or something like that. Look for a hole about the size of a golf ball and then put a rat trap right there and put some cheese, like Velveeta cheese or something, on the rat trap. That's the best way to get rid of voles. So the two different things, and you have to go after them with two different, you know, kind of thoughts.
Well, based on what you described, I think we have moles rather than voles. But I do appreciate your show and you very much, and thank you for your advice.
Sure, my pleasure. I greatly appreciate it. And again, I'm probably not going to try to get another call in because that would be too soon. But this is a perfect time of year to get your soil tested. If you can get it tested at lots of different places or private companies, but if you'd like to have the University of Missouri do it, and there you can drop it, a sample off in Kirkwood on Monroe. And what they do, they don't test it right there, but they're going to send it down to the Columbia, and they test it there at that location. Then the results are going to come to you, and the results are going to talk about phosphorus, potassium, calcium, magnesium, the amount of organic matter that's in your soil, the pH, and several different other things, too. It takes about 10 to 14 days after you submit a soil sample to get the results. And if they've been overwhelmed, it might even take a little bit longer. And then in the city, you can drop off locations, Brightside St. Louis or Gateway Greening, either one. So it's really important. Mike Miller, KMWalk's Garden Hotline, back after the news.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, it's the tip of the trowel hour, and I'll be giving that shortly. But right now, you can give a call, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with any ideas, questions, concerns, or comments that you may have. And Mr. Kelly,
yo,
just out of curiosity, hummingbird population, has it started to drop?
I think it is a little bit, because yesterday we had all the feeders filled up, and usually most of them empty out during the course of the day,
right.
But yesterday they did not, and so I think it's starting to thin out, but last weekend was probably the most I've ever seen.
Really?
At our house, yeah, we had a bunch of them.
Because this was the first week that I hadn't seen any at all.
Really?
Yeah, so yeah. I figured they'd, you know, started their mass migration, at least around our home.
Yeah, I think they're starting that way, because it seems like we're down a little bit from about a week, the last couple of weeks. Okay. We got back from Colorado, and it took a day or two to build it back up again.
Sure.
And boy, they were just going nuts. So now I think they are starting to pack up, and which means now they're eating a lot of bugs, I understand. They go from the, they're still eating the sugar
nectar.
Water, the nectar, but apparently they also, you know, they stock up on the protein from the bugs.
Right.
So you know, if you have bugs around, keep them.
Yeah, I put bird seed down on the sidewalk, and the population of birds coming down has started to drop too, so I guess there's a lot more stuff, you know, naturally that the birds are eating as opposed to coming and eating bird seed off the, you know,
the
sidewalk.
This time of year, the sunflower seed lasts a couple days in the feeders.
Right.
Whereas, you know, at the winter, they're every day you're filling
sure.
them.
Exactly.
So, yeah, you can tell the difference a little bit right now.
Transition.
Yeah, it is for sure.
Great. Thanks, Brian.
You bet.
Yes, folks. And thanks for having me on your show. We can discuss plant selection, caring for, ups and downs related to annuals, bulbs. Yes, you can buy your spring flowering bulbs now, like at Brightside St. Louis, but remember, don't plant them yet. It's too soon to be planting them. How about your vegetable garden? Speaking of vegetables, a gentleman across up the street from us, he has so many tomatoes and peppers. When you walk by, he said, "Would you like some tomatoes or peppers?" So he's giving them away. Ground covers, houseplants, lawns, perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, or water gardens. I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take for success. And it's strictly for offered to you to consider. Alex is there at the big board. He's producing. So when you call, just give him your first name and where you're calling from. During the week and weekends, today I'm headed to De Pere. After the show, I go and do walk-and talks where we look around the landscape and take a look at what's going on and everything else. So you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. The homepage, that's my email address and phone number, is listed there. And you can contact me and we can set up a time where I'll come and share 40-plus years of experience of professional outdoor stuff. Anyway, so I talk about design. You know, I don't do any formal designs anymore, but the plants, care, and all those type of things. The tip of the trowel is a special recognition for individual group or situation that's made an impression on me, and is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Brookdale Farm, which is in Eureka. It's on Twin Rivers Road. We were there last Wednesday, and they have a huge sunflower field, and they have a maze going through the sunflowers. So it was really kind of cool. It's, you know, there was lots of bees and everything else, but the bees were so involved in with all the sunflowers, they didn't care anything about the people. But Tracy took some great shots, and it was just really a neat place. We'd never been there before. It's kind of down in the valley between the Merrimack and the Big River. So again, Brookdale Farm on Twin Rivers Road in Eureka. Great place to do the sunflower maze. They also have a corn maze, and that's going to be coming up after the sunflowers are finished. But this is a pretty substantial amount of a number of sunflowers. So it was fun just to kind of wander through. The maze is not really a maze where you can get lost or anything, so you don't have to worry about it. And they got all kinds of other stuff. And another thing that kind of caught us by surprise was the fact there's an ATM sitting out in the middle of open field. I thought, who's going there? Wildlife or something like that? But probably they have a lot of people that come at certain times. And that field is where is the parking lot. So that's where the ATM is. They got a food truck. They've got all sorts of other things going on as well. So, again, Brookdale Farms on Twin Rivers Road in Eureka. So they get the tip of the trowel from me. And, like, we probably spent close to 2 hours or so there just wandering around, taking pictures. There's tractors you can take pictures of. You can get up there and act like you're a farmer or something else. There's old farm equipment. And just some really neat stuff. So, Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, please remember, if you've had anything installed even last year and, of course, this year, that these dry periods, we don't know if it's really going to rain today or not or whatever. Make sure that these plants are getting water. Newly installed things, they got to have moisture if they want to have a root system established. If you don't do that, then you got trouble. And so just keep that in mind. Also, this time of year is a time when you should have already done your last fertilization on your roses. So after mid-August, no fertilization, you're going to start seeing powdery mildew, which is like kind of a grayish white film on lilac leaves, phlox, zinnias, and other ones. They don't look good, but they really don't cause much problems. So keep that in mind as well. Let's go now to the phones, and let's go to Chris's yard. Chris, how are you today?
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I got a question about some pear trees.
Okay.
I think I've got fire blight, maybe.
Okay.
Should I just give up and have them taken out?
Yeah, basically, once a tree has fire blight, it's an internal thing. There's nothing can be done at all to stop it. It's just going to be a slow, you know, process. So, in other words, if you have like 10 or, you know, 12-inch twigs that all the leaves are all brown, then you do have fire blight. It's transmitted by basically insects. And they go to, and they get, let's say, contaminated with the disease, the fire blight, from a tree that has it, and then they fly to another tree, and that's how they, you know, they spread it around. So it's basically by beetles is what it is.
It seemed to happen after we had them trimmed a little bit, but was that maybe just a coincidence?
Yeah, coincidence more so than anything else. You know, if there was a circumstance where hopefully these tree services are not letting this happen, if they took down a tree that had the anthracnose and then didn't clean their equipment and then came over and pruned your trees, then that's a possibility. But usually they don't do that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, I appreciate it. They were good cover. That we kind of, we had four in a row, and they were good cover between us, gave us some privacy on our deck. would you recommend a different type of tree to put in there?
Yeah, maybe a hornbeam or something like that. There's several different kinds of trees that grow with a vertical habit. So you can go to either go online or go to your favorite garden center that, you know, specializes in, you know, that has trees and stuff, and go in that direction.
Kind of a vertical growth instead of going out.
Right, exactly. Because, okay. I mean, the going out is fine. It's just that usually the vertical growth is going to be a little bit faster because they're going to grow in one direction. The ones that go lateral, it just seems to take a lot longer.
Yeah, well, and there's not a ton of space lateral, so that would be great. So
right.
Would you call that a hornbeam?
Yeah, there's hornbeams which grow more or less vertical, like a flame, kind of like a Bradford pear, only they don't even get as wide as a Bradford pear does. There's several of those in the city as street trees, and they make a good street tree because they don't overhang the street, so the street sweepers and trucks and stuff like that don't tear them all apart.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go to Sue. And Sue, what's going on in your yard?
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I have a sago palm. Well, I have three of them, but I have one that I can't really tell you how old it is. It's over 10, maybe 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And for the last 3 years, no new fronds. I put it outside. And encourage it, feed it, water it, along with the other two. The other two got their nice fronds 6 weeks ago, and this big guy has not gotten fronds for 3 years. Now, it does have a baby, but I haven't really done anything with that because I'm not able to really get down into it.
Right.
So I'm wondering, what am I not doing? Is it too old? What?
Well, the existing fronds, are they turning brown? You know, or are they just...
No, yeah. No. I've got some sunburn on them because they, you know, from this year. But no.
No, you're doing everything fine. So I wouldn't worry about it. It's unfortunate that that's the case. So it may be an age factor. It may be the size of the pot. So in other words, the pot... is more or less bone-sawing the thing, so it's kind of keeping it at that size. But I wouldn't put it in a bigger pot. If it's healthy, you're getting, babies at its base. You're doing everything just right.
Okay. Well, I've never had one like that before, and I'm really, I can't repot that big stuff anymore. So,
right. Don't bother.
Okay. And is there any magic to, I've had some beautiful elephant ears this year, and I got some dark ones, black and whatever,
uh-huh.
And they've been really nice. But I find other years that the bulbs on the dark ones aren't near as big.
Right.
And they don't always... weather over winter. I take them in like I should and keep them in paper bags in the back room. But they're so small that most of them don't come up again.
Right.
Is that usual with the dark ones?
Pretty much. I mean, those are a little bit more exotic. And so their ability to survive in our circumstance where they have to come out of the ground, basically, they're native to, or they do much better where they can be grown outside year round. That's going to be a completely different situation. But what we have to do, the way we have to play with them, what you're doing and what is happening is exactly probably what you could anticipate.
Yeah, I ordered these from a nursery.
Uh huh.
And when they came, they didn't come as big balls. They came potted and already. With a few leaves.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they're beautiful. My deck looks like Hawaii. Because that's the only place I can put something that the deer don't get. So, but, they're so pretty.
Great.
That I'd like to be able to winter them over. I was wondering even if I just should...
maybe pull them out of the pot, put them in a small pot, and put them in a sunny window and see what happens.
Okay. That's what I was wondering.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Yep. I love your show.
Oh, well, thank you for
and,
having me
you
on
take
your
care
show.
Of yourself, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
And let's go now over to Keith's yard. Hi, Keith.
Yeah, Mike, this is Keith Edinger. And I'd like to, years ago, we had this bug that grew up. It was a fly, really, a big, well, it flew, and it gets all over your car. You could sweep them up off the street and all, but I don't remember the name of the bug that it was. Doing that, and they stayed around the river. Do you remember?
It's not a cicada?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe that's it, yeah.
Yeah, they scream. They scream in the evening, and then, you know, they leave the exoskeleton on the tree and stuff like that. This is cicada time of year.
Oh, yeah, okay. Now, we haven't seen them for several years now.
I mean, some...
It's not, a, no, Mike, it's not that. No, it's not either. No, that's not the name. That's not the name of them.
Hmm.
This was a different kind of a bug.
Oh.
And it had wings, but it wasn't the key to, no, it wasn't that one.
No guess then. You know, I mean, they're the ones, there's a 17-year cicada and then there's the annual cicadas.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Is one of them smaller? Do they shed their skin?
Yeah, they all do.
Okay, well, this one didn't, I don't think.
Well,
Mike, I think it's been 15, 20 years since this one's been down there.
Oh, No guess without seeing it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to find out with someone else, I guess. You know, knows more about the bugs than we do.
Right. Somebody that actually, maybe if you can catch one, it's much easier to identify something if you can physically see it.
Yeah. Well, I don't think I'd catch one because we don't have them now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I was just wondering what they were.
Right.
So, okay, well, I appreciate you trying to answer my question. I'll find somebody older than us, huh? Okay, Mike, thank you.
And it looks like you live in Illinois, so get a hold of the University of Illinois Extension Service and see if they can
help you.
That's
a good idea, yeah, right. Okay, I'll do that.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, and Goodbye. Now let's head to Steve's yard. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Very good.
We've got two questions for you. One, calla lilies. I got them from a friend of mine and planted them 2 years ago. They grow. They're almost 2 feet tall, but they're not flowering.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Yeah, well, it sounds like if they're growing and they're healthy, and so we're talking about calla lilies, right, that have some of the leaves, you know, depending upon the variety, can have white speckles on them. Some of them are just green, but they should. I mean, and the flower is kind of a cup-like flower.
Right.
Okay, so, yeah,
now,
why
they had them all over her. She had them all over her yard, and I just took a couple, and they just have not flowered.
Yeah, that's surprising, because we've got some, and ours are been flowering for a while now. So,
damn, I really like those.
They are nice.
Okay, that's one thing.
Now, another question. Are you leaving them outside for the wintertime?
No, I dug them up and brought them in.
Yeah, that's okay. That's what I thought, because I was going to say, I've never really known them to be able to survive our winters.
No, they're beautiful. They look like they're, when they do flower, they're going to be great.
Right.
But they just don't.
Yeah, there's all kinds of colors. You know, there's white. The ones we have right now that are flower are kind of like a dark maroon color.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay, and then the other thing I had was, I hear you talking about this poison ivy woody plant Roundup.
Right.
Where do I get that?
Ace Hardware's, you know, big box stores, most of those places should have them.
Not the poison ivy woody plant.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they've got everything else, but not that one.
Maybe there's a company here in the metropolitan area called Hummerts International, Hummert. You know, just go online, check them out, see if they've got it, and they've got a retail store involved with them.
Hot dogs. All righty then. Thank you, sir.
Sure, my pleasure. Mike Miller, KMWash Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Back to the phones we go. If you have questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head over to Al's yard. Hi, Al.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Question about a pin oak tree. It's about 24 inches in diameter, so about 2 or 3 feet up. Every year it comes out looking fine, except the leaves at the top are a little small in an area. But then as the season goes on, those smaller leaves tend to fall off and some of the others turn more yellow. In the past, I have treated it by drilling holes in the ground and putting in the iron and everything.
Right.
I was talking to an arborist the other day about another job generally, and he mentioned something called C20, which I've never heard of. And he, if I understood him, recommended kind of applying that around the ground underneath. I hadn't heard of C20. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not. But, you know, if this is happening in the same, location on the top of the tree year in, year out, to me, that says there's some physical damage to those branches up there. And that's why this is happening more so than it could be, could be who knows what. But for it just to be in the same place year after year after year says to me it's a physical type thing.
OK, yeah. And some of those branches do seem to be dying out, I was just wondering about the C20. Thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure. And let's go out to St. Charles and into Brad's yard. Hi, Brad.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Thank you for your service and your show. Hey, I have a question about my asparagus out in my garden. It's growing great. I prepared the bed. This is the first year, so I know I'm not going to get a crop.
Right.
My question is, when do I cut those ferns off?
I would leave them until they start kind of looking like they're headed downhill, because all that, basically what they're trying to do is build up themselves strength-wise, so they're basically making food, chlorophyll, and that's sending energy back down into the root system, and that'd be next year's crop of asparagus.
Okay, so maybe after the first hard freeze?
Yeah, it may not be that late, just when they start looking like they're declining.
Okay, so when they look like they're spent.
Right.
Kind of, and how much should I leave? Should I leave 3 or 4 inches?
No, you don't need to leave that much. A couple inches is plenty.
Is that right? Okay.
Because stalk is not necessarily going to come up. It's going to come up off the root system.
Exactly. Okay. Very good. Very good. Okay. Well, they're looking really good, and I wanted to get your advice on that. If I may, Mike, I do have a suggestion for the people out there that are having trouble with voles. My neighbor and I built a couple boxes last year, and we would set the mouse trap, the trigger end of the mouse trap, right there at the hole, and then put a box on there, and the end of the box was open. So the only way they could get out was to walk across the trap.
Ah.
And we didn't have to bait it or anything. They didn't have a choice. If they wanted to get out of the hole and get out onto the ground, they had to walk across the trap.
Wow.
And I think last year my neighbor and I, we got close to 50 of them.
Good God.
Yeah, it was fish in a barrel. It was crazy. So that's just a little, I know that's what works out here in St. Charles. So just a little free advice for all your listeners.
Sure.
And with all that, I'll let you go, and I appreciate your service tremendously.
Well, great. Well, thanks for the insight. So.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mike, for everything, and have a good weekend.
You do the same thing. And now let's head into Brentwood and go into Jan's yard. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Mike. Earlier you were talking about putting compost down after you aerate. What do you do with the little plugs? Do you mix that in with the compost or get rid of them or what?
They just melt on their own, basically.
Okay. You don't need to do anything special with
them. No, you don't have to break them. You don't have to break them up or do anything at all.
Okay. And then you talked about seed before or after the compost. Is that true of azolla?
Well, zoysia, I've never really, people say they've used zoysia seed, but I've never really known of it being successful.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
And now let's go to Charles's yard. Hi, Charles.
Hello?
Hi.
Hey, how are you doing? I have a question about a tree. I've spoken about before. It's a 50-year-old apple tree. And you tell me to take a piece off of it and try to save whatever. Still, you know, burn the apples. But how do I take that piece off to start a new tree?
Basically, you're taking a branch, you're going to get some rooting hormone, and you're trying to take cuttings off this tree, correct? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So just probably like a 12 or 14-inch branch tip, and then you're going to dip the cutting, make the cut at a 45-degree angle, dip it into a rooting hormone, and then put it in a pot with potting mix for starting plant material. And that's basically what you need to do. That's what, you know, production nurseries do. I mean,
I
can't. You're kind of blurring out.
Okay, I can do that to a rose bush too, right?
Roses, it all depends. Some of them yes, some of them no. The shrub type roses, yes. The ones that are grafted roses, like the grandifloras and hybrid teas and things like that, probably is not going to work as well because those are basically two different plants that are put together.
Got it. Okay. One more, if I may. I tried to grow watermelons this year, and they grew, but they all kind of like shrank at the end of it and just turned brown, just shrank. Is that the heat or just bad materials that I'm working with?
Probably the soil is part of that problem, and maybe the watering habit and everything else. But if they started to grow and then just kind of basically took a dive, then there's something inherently wrong with, you know, the whole production aspects of it.
All right. Thank you very much.
Sure. My pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And now let's head over to Craig's yard. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
I planted some purple leaf sand cherries, and the rabbits really liked them. So I put some hardware cloth around them, and they seem to grow up good. Can I take that hardware cloth from around them? When will they stop chewing on them?
Maybe never.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought maybe they would mature up or something.
Well, usually if the bark and everything gets bigger, they like to chew on things when it's, you know, smaller and a little bit more, let's say, moisture-oriented. But it's going to be a while.
Yeah, and the same, the hostas, too. They kind of chewed the hostas up. I guess you got to get rid of rabbits. That's the key, right?
Exactly.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's head over to Nancy's yard, and she lives in Union. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question for my daughter-in-law. She planted yucca years ago, and it's gone completely crazy, and she wants to get rid of it. Is there anything that kills yucca?
Roundup will kill it. It's just going to be, it may take a while to get rid of it entirely. Physically digging it up, that's another way to do it, but it has extensive root systems. And what she needs to do is, before she puts a Roundup on there, if she has any kind of thing that she can cut it off and basically have open wounds and then spray the Roundup right onto those open wounds. That would be the way to get it, you know, the process going on faster.
She did that, exactly that, and it just keeps growing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be a long, involved process. It's not a one-shot deal because they've got an extensive root system, and you could kill the mother plant, but the root systems and everything else can still keep going.
I have another comment. I had I had hibiscus. They don't do well here. A friend that gave them to me, they're like a weed there. This white one was near, I'm underground wiring here, and it was near an electric connection box, and it went absolutely crazy, and it got too big and was leaning way over and interfering with cutting the lawn. We had to cut it down and get rid of it. And this yucca she has is the same thing. It's near one of those electric boxes. Does that have an effect? I'm thinking it maybe it does. It makes plants go nuts and grow excessively.
Well, I guess that could be the case, but it's generally not because a lot of people are trying to block those electric boxes. So they plant, you know, let's say ornamental grasses, all kinds of other stuff around them, but it's not like they go nuts. So...
Well, those two experiences I've had. And the other thing, I've talked to a neighbor about it. If they have a pool and the whatever they put in their pool, you know, to keep it, I guess it's mostly chlorine.
Right.
I don't know, but she had the same issue years ago trying to get rid of yucca. And she thinks that is the thing that finally killed it. Do you have any comment on that?
That very well could be. I guess you could put bleach on it or all this other stuff. But when you do that, then you contaminate the soil. So once you get rid of this stuff, then you may not be able to, you know, do anything until you get rid of all that soil that's been contaminated out and put some new soil in that location.
I absolutely understand all that. I've been an organic gardener for years, but I'm getting too old to do it anymore. But, yes, she has a real problem with this yucca. It's just out of control. And grapevines.
Yeah.
But
Hillerman's
is in Washington. I talked to them, and they recommended something that would kill the grapevines. It's T-O-R-D-O-N.
Tordon?
Tordon.
Right.
Yeah, so that she can attack the grapevines with because they're out of control also. But this yucca, it just doesn't seem like that's what they recommended to. Dig it up as far down as you can go and then put rock, plastic over the whatever's left of the root and rock on top of that and then refill. And they weren't guaranteeing that it wouldn't eventually come back up anyway.
Right. It could poke its way through. Yeah, that stuff is brutal.
Ted, I can't hear you. I don't hear so well.
Well, that is brutal. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, the yucca doesn't give up easily, that's for sure.
That's what I'm finding out. Well, I just wanted your opinion. I will let you go. I know you have other callers, but thank you for your comments.
Sure. My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
And 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We'll be back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, back to the phones we go. We're headed to O'Fallon and into Tom's yard. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Mike. I heard you talking about pre-emergence that should be put down now. I'm familiar with the pre-emergence for the spring, but I'm not familiar with the pre-emergence for the fall. Can you explain?
Well, it's just a different kind of weed. It's a cool season weed that grows, you know, during the winter time, and then when the weather gets hot, then it kind of disappears. So that's the difference. Is, you know, that's
who. Do all the manufacturers, Scotts, Vigoro, do they all make that product?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, it doesn't take a separate pre-emergent, so you don't have to worry about what it is. The cool season weeds are going to be germinating that you're going to be trying to kill, like henbit, chickweed, annual bluegrass, prickly lettuce, Persian speedwell, things along that line. That's what you kill by putting the seeds as they germinate by putting a pre-emergent down this time of year.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate
sure.
it.
And now let's head over to Ron's yard. Hi, Ron.
Hello, Mike.
Yes.
I wanted recommendations for a ground cover with a real dry, not much moisture that can stand pretty desert area moisture conditions.
Sunny.
Sunny, yeah, mostly sunny, yeah.
Probably you're still going to have to improve the soil because nothing can just kind of take off on its own. But there's lots of different varieties of sedum, S-E-D-U-M. So take a look at the sedums. That's going to be one of your best choices.
Okay. How about ivy? Would that work as well?
No, don't do the ivy.
No ivy, okay.
No, that can't handle that situation.
Okay, sedum. I'll look for sedum then. Thanks. Yeah. And where's a good place to get sedum?
Basically, most of the garden centers should have it. They'll have it in trays like a... 36 little plugs or whatever. So that'd be the best way to get it. And just look online at the different kinds of sedum because there's some that are more evergreen than other ones.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Mike.
Sure. My pleasure. And Scott, if you could do it really quickly.
Thank you, Michael. Real quickly, how do you prep the ground to get grass and stuff out before you put in clover?
You mean as far as killing off the grass?
Yes, killing off so I don't have more weeds and clover.
Yeah, so what you need to do is just use an all-purpose herbicide to kill off the stuff that's there. Then realize that you're going to turn the soil over and then get the Dutch white clover seed to go. But you're going to have some weeds that are going to come up in it. And so you're just going to have to understand that that's part of the scenario.
And quickly off that last question, the gentleman about the pre-emergent, do you core aerate, put grass seed down, then a pre-emergent, or how do you keep the pre-emergent from killing the good stuff?
Basically, pre-emergent only kills seeds. It doesn't kill good plant materials.
Okay, how about grass seed? Does it kill that?
Yes, absolutely. Any kind of seed, right. It will kill.
So the timing of it then?
Right.
When do you put grass seed down and then a pre-emergent?
So basically, you got to decide one or the other.
Ah, okay. Well, that's the answer.
That's the best way to go about it, rather than trying to coordinate.
Thanks for your help. I love your show.
Sure. The pre-emergence basically lasts about 30 days or so. So, I mean, you can juggle it that way, but it's just much easier if you just don't try to do it that way. So thanks, Scott. Thanks to everybody who called in today. Greatly appreciated. I don't know if it's going to rain today or not, but, man, the ground is pretty darn dry. So don't stop watering, irrigating your plant materials, your lawn, and everything else. And just have a great weekend. It's just getting near the end of August, and it's been quite the year as far as plant material-wise and everything else. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline.